Chapter 18. The ritual of the morning was broken by a summons to Reggie's office. It was annoying having to attend a surprise meeting before lunch. Giles liked that period for a bit of quiet reflection. Reggie had too much juice to ignore, though. Giles could disregard other meeting requests, did so, in fact, frequently. But a call from Reggie was akin to a call from God, and if you did not answer the call of God, God would come find you. He stopped for coffee on the way over, purposefully. A summons was all well and good, but a moment could at least be spared for coffee. He stood in line at the machine, ignoring the double buzz of the phone in his pocket, resisted the urge to check it, and instead shifted in discomfort. Others in the line glanced back at him as though questioning if he would do something about that incessant noise. He avoided their gaze and wondered if they ever experienced a buzz inside their heads when they were so summoned. He suspected not, but was unsure. There were two flights of stairs to traverse between his windowless little closet on the ground floor and Reggie's suite on Mahogany Row. Giles passed the secretary with a slight nod, who smiled at him and tapped a glowing icon on her screen.
"It's about goddamn time," he heard Reggie call from the chamber within.
"I'll just go in then," Giles said.
"You'd probably better hurry," she whispered.
Giles passed through the entry into the land of plastic smiles and baneful propriety, of empty promises and aggressive streamlining. It was a world in which nothing was real, not the mahogany of the desktop, nor finality of a commitment given. Here you could be assured of your great contribution in the same breath as was given the apology for your dismissal. He passed a small round table located by the side entrance to the private washroom and sat in an uncomfortable chair across from his old friend.
"I sent for you 20 minutes ago," Reggie said.
"Yes, I'm sorry I had to make a run to the restroom on the way up." Reggie's eyes dipped to the steaming coffee cup. Giles took a sip in response and rested it on a table.
"So I'm here now," Giles said. "What can I do for you?" "I received a call from our old friend Kevin Roth this morning."
Giles tried to hide his grimace, but Reggie, who had known him since before the beginning, saw it anyway and said,
"He's always spoken very fondly of you, Giles."
"Well, isn't that nice?"
"Yes, I think it is. They're requesting your presence in New York."
The sensation of something hard and small impacting the inside of his ribcage robbed Giles of his ability to respond. It was a unique feeling, the way hearing Kevin Roth's name after so long was a unique feeling, and he thought the thing that had smashed against his sternum might have been something like a heartbeat, only that could not be so because he thought he could feel that as well, his heart, as it slid down into his guts like a cold, slimy ball of clay.
"No. They're requesting your presence strenuously, Giles."
"Tell them no, strenuously.
Not an option."
"Why? Why is it not an option?"
"The board is involved. This one's out of my hands."
Giles stared at his cup of coffee for a few moments, waiting for the pounding of his head to subside. Then he stood up, crossed to the other end of the office, and shut the door. He tried to smile at the secretary as he did so, but the look she gave him suggested he made a poor job of it. When he came back to the chair and sat down, he laid his palms flat on the edge of the desk, leaned forward, and said,
"Reggie, I want no part of it." "I'm sorry. I can't."
"Fuck you, Reggie. The answer is no. Fuck them too, and the board." Reggie clicked his teeth shut, leaned back in his chair, and looked up at the ceiling. He blinked several times, and when he looked down again, the green pinpricks of light had disappeared from the center of his pupils.
"Uh-huh," Giles nodded.
"I thought that level of surveillance was supposed to be illegal."
"You can never be too careful, Giles. I can't, at least. You'll apparently run your stubborn mouth regardless."
"Let them hear."
"Oh, yes, let them hear.
Giles, they don't care what you say or think about them. You should know this by now. They don't care if you agree, or even if you're happy, necessarily. They care about happiness as an abstract concept in as much as it impacts bottom line and workforce turnover. That's it. You can say about them whatever you like so long as it isn't to their faces and you still do your job."
"Running back out there to deal with that? That's not my job."
"Wrong," Reggie said. The vein in his temple was beginning to stand out. Giles knew shouting might follow if he was careless, Usually the prospect of such an interaction was enough to back him down. Not now, though. Your job is what I say it is. It's important that you head out there, Giles. It's important to the company. Therefore, it is important to me, which means ultimately that it's important to you. It's important if you want to keep your job. In fact, it's so damned important that you're not the only one going out there. I'm heading out this time as well to keep an eye on everything. Oh, and let's not tiptoe around it, okay? Your performance here, it's a fucking joke. I've sheltered you from the fact that you seem to be bent on doing the bare minimum. I thought once upon a time that it was a reasonable reaction to Anna's death. Do not bring her into... Oh, shut the fuck up, Giles. You don't get to hang on to that anymore. There's a statute of limitations on such things. I don't know what they are precisely, which is why I think I've let things go on for as long as I have, and shame on me, but I'd say a goddamn decade falls well outside the maximum allowable boundary, wouldn't you? And this has been going on longer than that. No. This is something else, my friend, and I'm not sure what it is. At this point, I don't care, so let me spell it out. You have not kept your skill set up with the current state of technology. You're still milking out your position on legacy systems and architecture. You have, for whatever reason, allowed yourself to be locked into sustaining engineering. I'm sorry, my friend, but that's a position that isn't nearly as indispensable as you seem to think it is. You have a real chance to renew your worth to the organization now. Can you see that? For whatever reason, they want you back there, not one of the people in R&D who are up to speed on SC interfaces, you. If you play this with the kind of brains you used to exhibit, this could be a major revitalization to your career. Or refuse it. Refuse it and pack up your desk, Giles, and good luck finding another company out there willing to pay you what we're paying you right now to do the kind of work you're existing on. Giles had stopped listening some time ago. It was a shame, really. It sounded as if it was a real haymaker of a speech. He stared at the black pit in the center of his coffee cup and tried to find where his mind had gone. Giles, what is it they want me to do out there? They were tight with the details. It does have to do with Cronus. My understanding is that the evaluation you made is to be reassessed. New things have come to light, and they want you involved. I see. Does that mean you're going? You fly out tonight, if so. Giles thought about telling Reggie where he could stick his flight. He had enough income stashed away that he could live comfortably for the next 5 years without ever leaving his bedroom, 10 if he left the state, scaled down, and picked up whatever small side jobs were available for a classical engineer. Those legacy systems were still out there, despite what Reggie might claim. He did not actually need to be there. He did not actually require their blessings or forbearance. New things had come to light, had they? What the hell did that mean? Another round of testing? Another chance to produce no answer at all? Did he really want any part of that? Could he really walk away from that? Could he really walk away? Giles lifted the coffee to his mouth, took a small sip, and poured out the remainder into the planter of a ficus that lived over by the window, looking down over the parking lot. Reggie watched this calmly and said nothing. Set up the ticket. I'll go home and pack. I'll go out to New York and figure out whatever the hell it is they want from me. In the meantime, have HR start working on my separation papers. I'm done here. Oh, you're done here. You're sure that's your I can be done right now, Reggie. I can be done right now, or done after New York. Figure out what you want. Right now. Reggie clenched his jaw, and Giles could not tell if it was because he was angry, or sad, or both. He took a heavy breath. Let it out slow like the casting off of a great burden. Fine. New York, and then you're done. The secretary glanced up when the door shut and smiled again at Giles. He stormed past without a glance in her direction, disappeared around the doorframe, and she listened to his footsteps as he traveled down the hall. She wondered after his manner for only a few seconds, really just long enough to forget him adequately, and then continued on with her day. The evening sun had nearly excused itself when the car rounded the corner of his street. Giles glanced up from his book as he always did when the vehicle approached the driveway looking for playing children and not trusting the stupid car to know the difference. The street was empty, though, and the homes of his neighbors were closed up tight for the end of the day, golden light showing the shape of their windows, and he looked at the darkness of his own home. And he wondered if she would still be there. It was a sad feeling. It was sad to wonder again if there would be someone in the home waiting for him when he came through the door. As he approached, he thought he saw someone standing on his doorstep. He looked closer, straining, and saw there was indeed someone there. The person was large and wide like a football player, and Giles wondered uncomfortably what he wanted. An interview? Was he there to harass Giles? An interview was like a harassment. Maybe the aim was to accomplish both. "Stop in the driveway," Giles whispered. The instrument panel glowed in a warm orange affirmation. When the car came to a stop, the headlights pointed up the driveway and bathed the front of the home in a milky haze, and Giles saw that the man on his doorstep was not a man at all. It was an older model hoplite. What the hell? It turned when his car came to a stop and approached the side of the driveway, the squat turret rotating above the shoulders to keep the car within sight. Giles thought he could feel the impacts of its feet on the concrete transmitted to his body through the car's chassis. It stopped by the headlight, and the plating along its chest and legs threw a painful glare, so Giles turned off the car. The lights died, and the hoplite was reduced to a towering square shadow with a small red light that flashed periodically at the center of its turret. Giles exited the car and stood there staring at it. He had seen units like this before, but only at a distance. He had not realized how large they were. He cleared his throat to speak, but it lifted a hand before he could get a word out.
"I must inform you, sir, that there is an intruder in the home."
Giles flinched when it spoke, and then looked around in all directions. Christ, but the thing was loud. He wondered how the whole block was not peering out at them through their windows. "Jesus, I'm right here. Please don't shout."
"I apologize."
He looked at it. The volume of the voice had lowered, but it still sounded to Giles like shouting. It sounded to him like the recording of a shouting man played through a small speaker.
What? Oh, hell, what are you doing here? What's your designation? Let's start with that, maybe."
"I am here on assignment. My designation is 3 Sigma, sir."
"Assignment?"
"Protective escort of the man Giles Gitteree to be deposited safely to the premises of Anak Norris's Technologies, New York State, United States of America."
Giles crept closer as it spoke and looked at it from the side, noting how the turret tracked him always. "You're a capable agent, aren't you? I mean, you're not slaved."
"That is correct, sir. All hoplite models were self-contained, capable autonomous systems."
"Good heavens," he muttered. He could not begin to imagine the expense. "Anak Norris has sent you for me?"
"I do not believe so, sir."
"No? Who, then?"
"I do not know, sir."
Giles glanced around the block again. "Come over and stand by the door."
"I must insist you take care, sir. There is an intruder in your home."
"Yes, but how do you know she's an intruder?"
"You have a guest." "There is no record of anyone else living at this residence."
Giles looked down and sighed. "Come over by the door, please." The turret rotated slowly in a full circle like a sweeping camera before it plodded in jarring thuds to the porch. It stopped by the door and looked back at him with that flashing red eye. Giles scratched at his arm nervously and looked around at the other houses again, certain he would see someone's shadow in one of the windows, like they used to do when the reporters came around. Still, there was no one, and he was relieved. He joined the hoplite at the door and asked, "You don't know who sent you?"
"I am an agent of the Pinkerton National Detective Agency, deployed on assignment, sir."
They contracted you?"
"I was deployed, sir."
"I see. And you don't know who contracted their services?"
"I do not."
"But you don't think it was Anak Norris's?"
"No, sir."
"Why?" There was a slight pause before it said,
"Assignments of the nature you suggest have always included an instruction set provided through a clear chain of custody. Such is not the case for this assignment, sir."
Giles glanced at his front door, which stood silent and impenetrable, and wondered if there was anyone on the other side. 3 Sigma seemed certain there was, but he did not know.
"You can quit with the sir business."
"I regret that I cannot, sir."
"What?"
I must continue to call you sir, sir.
Oh, Christ, are you serious? Why can't you just call me Giles? You have not given me permission to do so, sir.
Giles stood there a moment with his mouth open and his eyes closed, working to process what the hoplite had just said. He had always assumed their decommissioning from the state police force had been due to union pressure and the expense of maintenance, though talking to the thing now he began to wonder if there had been other reasons involved. Perhaps their lack of growth was too great a hindrance.
Three Sigma, you may refer to me as Giles.
Thank you, sir.
You just did it again.
Yes, I'm sorry, sir. The imperative must be more forceful.
Son of a...
Refer to me as Giles.
Understood, Giles.
Jesus.
Three Sigma.
No, never mind.
Yes, sir.
Now, God damn it, you did it again. What the hell is it this time?
I am not allowed to refer to you as sir at any time.
Giles sighed.
No, for Christ's sake, do not call me sir. Call me Giles and only Giles, period.
He waited for the hoplite to respond, but it did not. He waited a little longer, and then nodded. When he reached for the door, he was brushed aside as easily as a kitten, and the square, brutish mass of the thing filled the entire doorway.
You must take care, Giles. There is an intruder in the house.
God damn it, Sigma.
Three Sigma.
Sigma. I'm calling you Sigma. Do you get it? I'm not calling you Three Sigma every fucking time I need to speak to you.
This is too goddamn much.
Fucking hell!
Sigma, then. Understood, Giles.
Please take care. There is
no, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy fucking Spirit. No, there is not. I know who's in here. We've been through this already. Get out of the goddamn way and let me by.
Sigma refused to move, and for a wonder, the turret rotated back and forth slowly as if it was a shaking head.
Please calm down, Giles. Your blood pressure has elevated significantly.
He placed a hand over his eyes and moaned.
It's elevated because you're an obtuse goddamn bucket.
I am much more than a bucket.
Yeah? Prove it and move out of the way.
I cannot until I have verified the security of this residence.
Giles put his head back and laughed. It was all he had left.
Fine. Fine. Secure the stupid residence, then.
He waited, staring up at the porch overhang, but Sigma did not budge. He looked down at it after a few moments and asked,
Well? What the hell are you doing?
Please unlock the door.
Oh, Jesus, get out of the way. Just get the fuck out of the way.
He thrust past Sigma, which shrugged out of his way like a swatted giant, and badged his vid over the lock. The door clicked loudly, and then he was prodded back by a rock-hard arm as Sigma pushed through the threshold. It crouched under the doorframe and stayed low as it passed along the hall, moving with little sound, but the hard rubber pads under its metal feet still thumped hard enough against the floor that Giles could feel it in his legs. Rolling his eyes, he followed behind and called out to Dora as he shut the door. Sigma spread its arms out immediately and crouched even lower. From someplace deep within its middle, a mechanical blat played, almost like an automated failure warning, and it said, Caution, sir. Caution. 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 With its lowered position, Giles was able to see over its back into the dining area. The table had been turned over on its side, and he could see the top of Dora's head as she peered back at them.
You sent the fucking Hoppy back here to drag me away?
No, Giles called, waving his arms over his head. The damn thing was just waiting for me when I got home.
Yeah, no shit. I've been watching it through the window for 2 hours now.
Caution, sir.
Get out of the way, Sigma! God damn it!
Caution, caution, caution.
Giles held his hands out in front of his chest and flexed them into fists. Released. Flexed. He did this a few more times until the urge to scream subsided and said,
Dora, I think you need to come out of there, okay? I don't think this idiot'll calm down until it can see you top to bottom.
You don't have anything like a weapon back there, do you?
I broke off a chair leg.
That's it?
I've got this kitchen knife to
slide them away and come out.
Her head dipped behind the table and she laughed.
Then you send the tin can over to grab me, right?
Dora, I didn't call this thing in here to get rid of you.
Think about it. I could have just gotten some regular old cops. Why would I spend the money on this thing?
Who the hell knows? You people have everything in this country.
We don't, Dora. And I didn't call the hoplite on you. Come out, okay? I don't know if I can stop the damn thing if you set it off.
A moment of silence stretched out between them, thickening the air the longer it held. Sigma blatted again like some kind of annoyed hound dog.
Sigma?
Yes, Giles. I order you not to take any action against Dora. Dora is the woman behind the table over there. She's a guest in my home. Do you understand?
I understand, but I need to see her, please. I cannot disengage before confirming her status.
If you think I'm coming out from behind this table, you're nuts. Giles panted out a tired moan.
Christ Jesus, Sigma, can't you just back off?
I'm sorry, Giles. Please understand there are certain overrides in effect that have been triggered. I am physically unable to comply until the guest has been visually verified.
Oh, my God.
How long do you want to sit there, Dora? Are you listening to this thing? It sounds ready to do this all night.
You're not going to send it after me?
Dora, I can promise you if I'd considered that an option, I would have done it a long time ago.
She came up from behind the table slowly, eyes locked on Sigma, and raised empty hands up to plain view. She stepped out around the table so that they could see all of her.
Raise your hands above your head and rotate, please.
She did so, and when she faced them again, Sigma stood suddenly as if nothing had happened and gave one final blat.
I apologize for the misunderstanding, miss.
She looked up at it sidelong and said to Giles,
I'd heard about these things, seen them on TV. I didn't realize they were this stupid.
I am a highly advanced, capable agent, miss.
Right. How much does a thing like this cost?
You don't want to know, said Giles.
Well, do you think you can get it to stop eye-fucking me?
Giles winced. She seemed far too young to speak in that fashion. I do not possess eyes, miss, nor any other of the parts implied by your vulgarity.
She looked at it a moment more and snorted derisively.
Highly advanced. Right. Advanced as a toaster.
She knocked the breastplate with a knuckle.
Please do not do that.
Please do not do that.
Oh, both of you knock it off, Giles said.
He passed by them, went into the kitchen, and fished some aspirin from a cabinet. He chewed them up dry and groaned quietly. He sensed her presence enter into the room behind him. He could not hear her. She walked like a cat. She said,
Headache?
Yes.
Sorry about that. It's from when I...
She cut off what she was about to say and looked back suspiciously at the hoplite. Giles followed her gaze and saw that it had come as far as the entryway. The turret's red blinking eye followed her constantly. Still looking at Sigma, he said,
I think it's all right. Really, I think the worst is past. You'd be surprised how advanced these things actually are.
Probably, given what I've seen.
That's just the limitation of their design. He's only capable.
Of what? She asked.
No, it's a designation. There are three basic tiers of artificial intelligence. You have the classical systems, okay? They're built on silicon processors, like what you'd have in a screen, and have been around since... well, since before you, I'd guess.
Sigma is a capable system. His innards are quite different. He has a self-contained quantum core buried somewhere in that huge chest of his, which gives him enough brains to be dangerous. He's not as impressive as a super-capable system, what we'd call an SC, but he's still quite a piece of technology. A unit like him can take on most skilled jobs and can learn new things after a fashion. Their main limitation is in processor density. The inner workings of his brain are highly patterned and rather limited, which means he has no creativity or imagination to speak of at all. It's why he gives the impression of being stupid. He's really not. You're looking at an incredibly advanced bit of hardware.
It's one of the reasons I'm so surprised he's out here, actually.
Dora looked at him and shrugged.
What do you mean?
Sigma was assigned to me, I guess.
Can you actually get on a plane, Sigma?
Yes, Giles, it has been arranged. Two seats next to yours. I will require the aisle, though.
It gestured to its bulky legs in explanation. Dora stared at Sigma as if it had just declared itself to be the Prince of Egypt, and then asked,
You're going on a trip?
Yes. I'm supposed to head out to New York.
Do you have some place you can go?
She shrugged dismissively.
I can find a place.
Let me give you some money.
She shrugged again.
Fine.
I don't suppose you have a vid, he asked.
The look she gave him suggested he was being as stupid as the hoplite, and he nodded.
Right.
Well, my flight's in a couple of hours. I don't keep any cash on me, but we can stop by a kiosk on the way to the airport. I'll get you a few notes, and, I guess I'll drop you at the bus station?
She looked down at the floor and nodded at her shoes.
Sure, whatever.
She does not seem happy, Giles.
Yes, thank you, Sigma.
I think you have made her sad.
Yes.
Shut up, please. God damn it.
He looked back at her and said, I'm sorry, there's not much I can do here. I can't leave you here. I don't know when I'm going to be back. I'd offer to take you to a home. There are a few on the other side of town, but I get the impression you wouldn't go to one of those.
No, I thought not.
Look, I can get you set up with enough to stay at a hotel for a few weeks until you get something figured out, okay, but I can't stick around. There's some business I have to see to.
It won't wait.
Giles, she said, why are you explaining? Who am I to you?
He hung his head and sighed.
Right. Well, I'll go up and pack. Anyway.
She went over to the dining table and lifted it back up on its legs. It was impressive to him. The thing was heavy, but she exhibited no real difficulty in riding it.
He watched her straighten it and arrange the chairs carefully for a few seconds, and then looked to Sigma. It stood in the center of the room like a foundation.
Giles shook his head slowly in disbelief. It was suddenly like a circus in his home.
How does everything happen at once? He thought. I've lived a quiet life. Tried to leave people alone.
The things contained within his home gave no answer, and he went upstairs to pack. He came back downstairs 20 minutes later with a small suitcase he doubted would need to be checked. He wondered if Sigma would truly be allowed into a regular seat. Perhaps the hoplite would need to be stowed in some fashion. Giles had never heard of such a thing. But then, of course, he had also never seen a hoplite up close. He could still remember when the first models came out, when they were hailed as the answer to the credibility problem of the law enforcement agency. A hoplite could not get carried away, could not be corrupted and take liberties, did not require medical benefits or a retirement fund. There had been many conflicting reports. A single hoplite still cost more than a human police officer over its useful life, even accounting for the legal fees and insurance nightmares of the bad apples. No, the leasing fees for the units were far preferable to the unpredictability of the volatile human counterparts. This especially so since Anagnorisis assumed all maintenance and calibration responsibilities. It was an argument that, so far as Giles could recall, had not been resolved. The union had come in and undone the whole business, and the hoplites were decommissioned and sold off to recuperate costs, sold off to private firms with strange, unfamiliar names, such as the Pinkertons.
What a strange name. It sounded like a name someone had dreamed up 1,000 years ago.
He set the suitcase next to the front door and moved about the ground floor, performing the last-minute pocket-padding activities one does before leaving for a long trip.
Giles, I am broadcasting a pairing signal at this time. Please connect your lenses to it now so that I can monitor your location and vital signs.
I'm afraid I haven't any, Sigma.
The hoplite made another blatting sound at the center of its trunk, as it had done before.
What the hell is that sound? Dora asked. It keeps doing that.
I suspect it's something like a mental hiccup, Giles said. A kind of double take.
We must acquire you some lenses. Their lack negatively impacts my abilities.
I won't be getting lenses, Sigma.
I must insist.
Yes, well,
I'm insisting harder.
What's your problem? Dora asked. You appear to have the money.
You must have. You haven't spent it on anything else, obviously.
Giles looked at her closely and asked, Do you have lenses?
She laughed.
I don't even have a vid, never mind the money.
But would you have them if you could?
Hell no. Slavery is an obsession for your kind, not mine.
My kind?
The kind that has so much of their lives made easy that they must look for ways to make it hard.
Giles wanted to explain life was not as easy as she supposed, but the words were not within him.
He looked at Sigma and said, Find a way to do your job without them. I'm not in any danger. We're driving to the airport, taking a flight, and then driving to a lab out in the New York countryside. We're not going to Syria.
We must drop it, Sigma.
The hoplite held its hands up in front of its turret, and the flashing red light tracked between them.
Drop what, Giles?
I mean, quit telling me to get lenses. I'm not doing it. I have a mobile. You can track that. A mobile phone may be broken or lost. So can lenses. Not as easily as—
Enough! Jesus Christ, I'm not doing it.
Yes, sir.
And stop calling me sir, Giles sighed.
He walked down the hallway, took his suitcase in hand, and said, Can we get the hell out of here now?
Dora, I'm sorry, but you'll have to sit behind me. I think I'll have to move the passenger seat all the way back to get Sigma in the car, and there's little enough leg room as it is.
He opened the front door and saw a man standing alone across the street. He was under a streetlight, and most of his face was shadowed under a ball cap, but Giles could make out his features from the nose down. From what he could see, the man had a full, round face, with no hair to speak of. Something about him made Giles feel uncomfortable. The body was very thin, as though the man was not a great eater, but that face was so full. It did not belong on the body to which it was attached. Giles did not have the time necessary to take in the detail of his clothes outside of a general sense of brownness. The man pulled a pistol from his jacket pocket and pointed it directly at him. He was pulled backward from the spine as if he was falling down a great well, but traveled sideways into the home. He thought to himself, I've been shot. One of the religious crazies has finally done it. I've been shot, and this is what being shot is like. Then he was laying on his back and looking up at Sigma. The hoplite slammed the door and then eclipsed it with its bulk. It gave off a belated blat and said, Caution, sir! Caution! Caution! He heard Dora's voice from out of nowhere right next to his ear.
What the hell just happened?
There was a sound from somewhere outside like the cracking of small fireworks, and puffs of wood dust began to issue from behind Sigma.
Extreme caution, sir!
Hands grabbed Giles at the shoulders, and he was dragged deeper into the home.